Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
So, in Texas, recently, the Sherman Independent School District School Board...
I can't believe you started that without referencing Beyoncé.
Why? Because Beyoncé's from Texas?
Because of the new Texas Hold'em song, Elliot. It is the number one song in the country. Everyone is singing it.
Anyone who doesn't like music...
Yes!
Texas
Hold'em. I can't sing the song, but you know...
If it isn't Padam Padam, I'm not interested, quite frankly.
Well, I don't. This is not near Houston, where Beyoncé is from, but a school board of trustees in Texas voted last week to suspend their superintendent, because it was related to an investigation into a trans student's removal from a musical in high school. So, a senior named Max Hightower was kicked out of the lead role in the production of Oklahoma, as were other students.
Oklahoma. The only thing I remember about Oklahoma is I was in the musical Oklahoma. I was in 19-something-something musical comedy Murders of Whatever. It's some play.
Was in that, too.
Yeah, you know the play. And Nikki Glazer and I, we had, like, the parts where we were, like, the playwrights, like, the play people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we walked off stage when we ended the play singing Oklahoma or whatever.
God.
That's the only reason. I've never seen Oklahoma.
Crusty-ass show. Oklahoma's actually, like... the most, like, you know, straightforward Americana you could, like, of a musical.
Yeah.
And yet they restaged it a couple years ago in the most, they did everything verbatim, but they restaged it in the most gruesome, vulgar, appropriately so way, the most subversive way to make it about, like, the current cultural
and if it's
atmosphere.
Subversive, you know, Elliot's buying tickets day
one.
I loved it. Wow.
Anyway,
all right.
So this kid Max was in the lead role of Oklahoma in high school, as were other students, and they were Max and other students were kicked out because the principal introduced new gender casting policies where only males could play males and only females could play females, and so these kids were kicked out of those roles, including Max. So the school district said there's no policy. Now they're saying there's no policy on how students are assigned to the roles. As it relates to this particular production, the sex of the role, as identified in the script, were to be used when casting. And then eventually, after further review, the district revised that original rule, saying sex will not be considered when casting the new production. You know, suffice it to say that, you know, obviously, like, you can think what you want about gender roles and who should be assigned what roles when it comes to I guess anything at this point. But when it comes to high school plays and musicals, isn't everything off the table? Aren't guys girls are historically playing guys? Guys are like if I remember correctly, it's just like. It's one size fits all.
I think the musical theater department at a high school and even the most conservative part of in Oklahoma is still a little faggy. And I think that's the argument that you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. But I guess
they should be. They're a safe haven for queer kids to go and be, well, not just for queer kids either, for all the weirdos who want to be a little weird and they want to work in tech, which is where some of them belong. I was on stage, thank you. But you know, that's where the weirdos go, and we belong there. Mm-hmm. Not belong there, but it's safe there.
Mm-hmm. And I do like that the school
this was one instance in which we won, right? Because the school board voted to remove this. Was it the superintendent or the principal?
They reversed the decision and then they suspended their superintendent, confirming that it was in relation to this.
Nice.
There was a three-hour closed-door meeting, and he was then suspended with pay afterwards. Pay is he's still getting paid, but you know he's not a superintendent there. Max Hightower's father, Philip, said, and this was just very funny. Quote, it struck me as kind of odd because it's Oklahoma. Maybe I saw the abridged version, but it's not Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. Which just shows you, and I love that quote because it shows you how ridiculous some of these things are. This is just a fucking bad high school musical. It is not going to be good. I'm sorry, Max. I'm sure you're very talented, but it is not going to get you to Broadway. It is a bad high school musical. Let anyone play any part that they fucking want to play because it's a bad high school musical.
Can I tell you a crazy story? My mom is a very, you know, my mom was a pianist. She's very supportive of the arts. Many years
department
ago.
Department stores, pianists and department
she
stores.
She supports department stores. She loves Macy's. Many years ago, she went to a performance at the high school in my hometown. And she, like, we were talking like a couple days later. And she's like, the performance was terrible. And I was like, yeah, it's high school. Like, yeah. I went to performances in college that I thought were terrible. Mm. It's like every high school performance is by definition going to be the worst iteration you'll ever see of that particular musical.
Sometimes yeah. Sometimes one of my YouTube rabbit holes is looking up videos of high school musical performances of the shows that are particularly adult. So like like videos from like kids playing adults in, you know, Brigadoon.
Sure.
Brigadoon, I don't know, that's like too boring. Yeah. But like Les Mis, like a kid's doing Les Mis, kids doing Cats is like there is
nothing. Or no, them doing Rent. Kids are doing Rent in school.
Kids
now,
doing
which
Rent
is crazy.
The greatest. You want to talk subversive? Kids doing Rent is turning it on its head.
I will one up you there. One of our favorite YouTube rabbit holes is to go down kids falling in high school theater productions. And it's just like,
I'll one up you there. You got to see Kelsey Grammer falling in a Broadway production. Walking directly off.
We've all seen that one.
Ooh, that one is good.
Wow, I don't know that one actually. I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Kelsey Grammer's like, you know, I think I forget the name of the show, but
Kelsey Grammer really is the personification of bad getting good. You know what I mean? Like he should not have been as good of and had as successful of a career as he should have stayed bad in High School Musical theater, and yet somehow he was able to take that
He was excellent on Frasier.
Sure, but that's what I'm saying, is that he figured out a way to go from really bad, he should have been bad, to being really good. Everything else he's done, with the exception of maybe his, is it Sideshow Bob on The Simpsons?
Oh, yeah, that's pretty great.
Those are the only two good things he's done. And, wait, no, he brought us
Girlfriends,
which is
the strangest thing in history. Kelsey Grammer was the executive producer of a show about four black women.
He was also amazing. The executive producer of Medium too, which is in that first season of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. We see the real, not the Patricia Arquette, but the real person that the show is based on, and she's sitting there with her vape, just being like, "I'll tell you when you're gonna die."
Wait, you're blowing my mind. I didn't even watch Beverly Hills, but I
you
know
need
that
to watch this mean. Because this moment they go to a dinner party with Kelsey Grammer's wife, where she has the character that the real person that the character is based on at the dinner party. And she tells Kyle, they're all in a fight and she's fighting with all of the girls. And she was like, you don't want to know. You don't want to know the things I know. I'll tell you when you're going to die. And then she just like takes a puff of her vape. It is so good.
That's who the character's based on?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Well, yeah. Okay. I was going to say something else about Kelsey Grammer, but I'm kind of in awe despite the politics.
Not even joking.
We are joined today by my other Golden Girls fave out there in the world, Barrett J. Blackman. Hello, Barrett.
Hello. You put the J in there. Sounds so
well,
official.
I had to because Elliot did, and I thought it was funny in the document that he put like Barrett J. Blackman. I mean, that was really funny to me.
There really should be an Esquire at the end of that.
Yeah, there should be.
I agree, and I do feel like I could be a lawyer, and I do tell people all the time, why do I need to go to law school? I could solve this issue for you. If you want to hire me, that's your choice.
Right? How about this? Dame Barrett J. Blackman Esquire. How about that? Does that work?
If I can fit that on a nameplate, then
you can. You'll find a way. You always find it. Well, so little for our listeners, little background on you. You host the podcast So Good. We named it another Golden Girls podcast. Wait, what is your line that you have about the podcast?
It's been so long.
It has.
Oh, the first Golden Girls and Golden Palace podcast, and the first Golden Girls or Golden Palace podcast with Black hosts, as seen at Golden Con 2022, Golden Con 2022, the Associated Press, USA Today, the Judge Mathis Show, and the Golden Girls Kitchen. So will we name it. And thank you, Bernice, for using the litter box right when I started recording. Much appreciated.
Wait, can you tell me about the Judge Mathis cameo that, you guys made?
Why were we on there? Oh, yes, because so the story is that I think I bought a TV 4K.
Yes, I think we hear the cat using the litter box, which I find very funny, and I want to keep in badly.
Why not? She's from Australia, so maybe that's what they do down under. But I bought it. TV for Kay, and then she never picked it up, and then it was too late.
For our listeners, Kay is your co-host of the podcast. Yes,
for me to return it, so I had to sue her. At least that's the story we're telling.
Oh my God. You both get paid when you go on a show like that.
Yes, and then they pay any judgment for you.
Wow. My God.
And you get a hotel, a driver, pick you up, you know.
Oh, that's fun. That's actually a really brilliant idea. I never even considered that.
We've been on Judge Mathis before, like 10 years ago, and I was on Christina's court.
Only Wheel of Fortune was as forgiving with return guests.
This is something I will say about Chicago that is kind of like a product of the 80s, but I kind of love it at the same time. That they, and not the Judge Show so much, but that daytime television has such like heavy roots in the city of Chicago, and it has morphed. I mean, Jerry shot there, of course, Oprah famously shot there, like a bunch of people. But now there's quite a few Judge shows that shoot in Chicago.
Now, I don't know if there's anything still filming here because everybody went to Connecticut for the tax break.
Yes, that's true.
And Judge Maury did. Canceled right after I was on it, just like Christina. Maybe I'm the problem.
It could be.
It was something fun to do.
Who is Christina?
Judge Christina Perez.
Yeah. You don't know Judge Christina Perez?
Oh, you know what's crazy? No. I think I went to college with her son. Because I remember being in a class in college, and he was really good looking, and he was really fratty, and he mentioned how his mom was a TV judge, and I was like, "The fuck are you talking about? No one's ever heard of." And I forget his exact last name, but I think it was Perez.
It was Marilyn Millian, probably. So
yeah, and I remember Googling it and being like, "Oh yeah, I guess his mom is a TV judge, whatever the fuck that means."
What a small world.
Yeah, I thought that was really strange. I wonder where he is now. He was really attractive. So.
Let's find him. Is he going to pop up now, like as a surprise?
Yeah,
that would be great. I wish I could have planned that as a surprise for Brent. That'd be wonderful. It does make me wonder, like the TV court. Like, I've never been a big judge. I mean, I like Judge Judy, but I don't really care. So, are you a judge, like court show person, Barrett?
Back in my younger days, you know, latchkey kid, watching Judge Joe Brown and whatnot. Mm. Nowadays, there's like 35 judge shows, so
a lot.
It can be a little hard to pick who you want to watch.
Yeah. I never really got the appeal of them. Go ahead, Elliot.
No, so you and Kay faked you faked the whole thing to get onto the show.
Well, I'm glad the show is canceled since you're outing me in this, you know, legally binding. But it's as real as you want it to be.
I love that.
Right.
But they were really like amping it up, like, okay, you got to make it really good. And, you
of
know,
course.
So I'm like, well, give the people what they want. So.
Yeah,
of course. You got to give them the spice. Did you feel like other people on your episode were also faking it, or did everyone seem actually truly unhinged?
I feel like we got the whole episode, if I'm not mistaken. Because I don't remember watching anyone else, unless I just shut it off after my part. But
which
I don't think
I would have done. I mean, you know, because if you're on it, what else matters? You know what I mean? Like, I wait.
And as a Golden Girls aficionado, you must be familiar with the infamous clip of Bea Arthur on Judge Judy.
Yes, I am. Wonderful witness to have of all.
What was she doing there? Do you remember?
For PETA. It was for PETA. So she went on as sort of like a, because she was a big animal rights advocate, and there was something, I forget the actual case, but it all was a fake thing in order to like promote sort of her talking about testing on animals and how it should be wrong and it shouldn't be, you know, being, it shouldn't be happening. And it was all basically for her to talk about PETA.
But she kind of equivocates, right? Isn't that what makes it so famous? Is that she's kind of like, no, I don't like everything famous. They do. And
yes, she does. She has, I mean, because of the way B. Arthur speaks, it's famous, but it isn't what she says necessarily that's famous. It's that B. Arthur is on Judge Judy. That is what's so famous.
Iconic.
It's iconic. Yeah. And it's so random and weird. But when you really dig into it, it really was just her. I mean, just like, you know, we know of all sort of like a lot of these shows, it's staged, it's produced, it's all of these things. And she was there to bring awareness for animal testing. I believe it was animal testing. I could be wrong on that, well, but still
ish. Like as far as they knew.
Yes. Yeah.
My favorite clip to, you know, across time and space, all, you know, of all things is B. Arthur making a quickie ad for, to encourage women Premarin. To stop using Premarin because it contains, as she calls it, horse urine.
It's made of horse urine. I'm not joking.
I'm not kidding. Yeah.
I'm not kidding. I love that clip so much.
That, I don't think I've seen.
Oh, that's a fan.
You've never seen that, Barrett? Barrett, that shocks me.
I can't. I don't know.
The reason it's so great is because it's no more than, 20 seconds max.
No, it's not even. It's 10 seconds.
10 seconds. She's holding her glasses. Like, you can tell it was literally made where she was just like, all right.
She's standing barefoot outside next to a horse. She's standing barefoot next to a horse.
Yeah, and
she's saying, I'm not kidding. I mean, it's so B. Arthur. And it's the way, again, it isn't necessarily what she says. It's the inflection of her voice in how she says it. That makes it so iconic because she is saying the line and then she goes, I'm not kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Like almost as if she's slapping us with that line. Like it's an actual, like an audible slap to the face. And it's so perfect. Wait, that brings me to Barrett. So you did have, now the podcast has since morphed into you covering other shows and doing other things, right?
Yeah, that podcast, it hasn't officially ended, but it probably isn't coming back. Or maybe we'll do like a 10-year hiatus like you did. But I don't know if she ever has said it publicly. So
I don't think we did a 10-year hiatus. Don't age me like that, Barry. Yeah,
like 10 years. But Kate's pregnant again, so that kind of makes it a little difficult. And we no longer work together, so, you know, our schedules aren't aligned. And I'm like, well, at this point, I've done everything, Golden Girls. What else is there to do? So it's not officially ended, but it's probably not going to have a whole lot more episodes. So I have been doing So Good We Named It and More, which is the more to that. It's like a spinoff. It's the end to my...
What other shows are as important to you as to Golden Girls?
Oh, well, I do love Desperate Housewives.
Yes.
Okay.
Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Okay, I need to talk about that, but go ahead. Yeah.
And what's the other show? The Walking Dead, of course. But I really just love TV in general. So I have like a never ending list. The Nanny, of course, will be up there.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Just mostly comedies.
Are Elliot and Brent, are you guys familiar with Degrassi?
No. And I am obsessed with Canada, but I don't know anything about it.
Well, it's the show that Drake got his start on famously.
Right.
But it also is now I did not know much about Degrassi other than the Drake connection to it before I got with my boyfriend Michael, and Michael is obsessed with Degrassi. I don't know if there's like, now Barrett, correct me if I'm wrong, because, and Michael probably is listening hating me for saying this, but there's two different versions of Degrassi. There's like old Degrassi and there's a newer Degrassi, right?
There's more than two. There's Degrassi Junior High, the kids of Degrassi Street. There's Degrassi's Next Generation, Degrassi Next Class. Now they have one that's going to be on HBO that I guess will be like Euphoria. There's a lot in the Degrassi universe, but they're all connected by Snake, pretty much.
HBO's taken a lot of big swings recently. So how would you pitch, like, is it like, I'm picturing like a Saved by the Bell style, maybe a little bit more serious. No. What's it like? Tell everyone who hasn't watched Degrassi, which is everyone listening, tell them what it's like.
Well, as the tagline says, Degrassi, it goes there, and it does. And I started watching it in seventh grade, so I was the same age as the characters. And then I continued to watch as they graduated and had kids because I'm hooked. You know, it's 15 years I've committed to this. But basically, it's like high school. It's a high school drama, but like any major thing you can think of is happening to them. Abortion, sexual assault, school shootings.
Very serious.
Ninja shootings in Canada. Give me a break. Oh, my God.
Well, but it's also what's so funny. I mean, I find it funny. I find it funny because it is done in a way, I don't know how to describe it, that, yes, they're dealing with these big things like, you know, abortion and all these things, but in a kind of Canadian telenovela way, where it's very, very soap opera-esque in that, you know, I think some kid gets paralyzed. Doesn't Drake get paralyzed or something?
Like, he's in a wheelchair, right?
But well, yes. I mean, yeah, but Drake gets paralyzed in a hilarious way, I think. I don't know. And there's like, he gets shot or something, right?
I don't know if it's hilarious. It was a school shooting.
But... Okay, probably not. But
he was a basketball star before that. So that was a real like, uh-oh.
Yeah. And there was I mean, it's, I have to, whenever Michael's watching it, and I am not watching it, I'll admit, I will come in those moments of, and then he raped me, and I'm just like, oh, brother.
Yeah, it's just something fun. So, you know, it goes back and forth. But I remember when they did, like, the stars at home, and Drake was like, oh, this is my recording studio in my basement, and I'm going to be a rapper. And I'm like, yeah, okay, sure, Jim.
Right. Yeah.
He showed me.
Yeah.
Well, now we met at you and I and Alan and Carrie and Kay all met at Golden Con, the first ever Golden Girls convention in Chicago in 22. Was that right?
Oh, was it?
Yes, maybe. I think so.
22. Yeah. So what? I mean, aside from meeting me and Alan, what was what did you love? How did you find Golden Con?
In typical fashion, you know, being pushy and stalking people. But I went to the Be Like Betty event, which was originally supposed to be a birthday party, and then it turned into a memorial, still fabulous, in Oak Park, where Betty is from. And I remember hearing about Golden Con, and I saw Zach and Cindy Fee, and I was like, I got to get to these people. I need to do something, even if
Cindy,
I'm at the
floor. Cindy Fee sang the theme song.
Yeah,
so Brent knows.
Yeah. I don't think anyone knows that. That's why I went to China. Yeah,
I forget. You know, everyone doesn't know these things. But I was like, even if I'm like ripping up tickets at the door, like I need to be a part of this in some way. And I'd gotten into the theater where they were having some other event, but the friend I was with was like, I don't think we can be in there, blah, 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 and slowed me down. And then they got me and put me out. But I took a lot of pictures and videos, and then I sent them to Zach. And I was like, oh, by the way, you know, here's some videos if you need anyone to participate. And he's like, oh, that would be great. And you're in Chicago. So I was in. But after that, you know, I was able to do it the next year. Still haven't heard about this year. Who knows? It'll still be happening.
Still waiting for that invite. Yeah.
But I just was like, this is the perfect thing. Like, finally.
It's such a fun. It's a fun event, right? In that, like, it like, I mean, especially if you obsess over a show the way we do, it's fun to be able, and for, I mean, at least for myself and Carrie, but also probably for Barrett and Kay as well, to be able to interact with like podcast listeners in a very direct way that you have been listening for a long time, but yet, you know, we've never met before. That's always the most exciting thing for me.
It was, I guess I don't ever assume people are like that into it like that. Looking at the analytics anyway, but someone caught us in the elevator and she's like, oh my God, I'm freaking out. And I'm like, wow, who's in here? And it was us. So that was exciting. And running into Ginger Minge when I've had my edible and I'm going to get my DoorDash from the lobby. And I think this was after the Mother of a Solid Gold party. So I still had my Blanche wig on, but I was in my robe. It was a lot going on.
Oh my God.
Like, where else can you have an interaction like that?
Now, I just forgot that there was literally a party where we were, the point was to dress like the gold. It was insane. Insane. Yeah. Sorry, Brent.
I remember Elliot, if I may say so, we've talked about this on the podcast. You found the experience almost a bit overwhelming.
It was overwhelming for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Just insofar as like everyone was so into it that you were almost like...
Something about it was a little unnerving in that the level of fandom about the show just became too much for me. Like it was a mix of like too much of one thing. It was like, and also I think realizing that I had like, I've really sort of corroded into some social anxiety as I've reached my more recent years. And that weekend I was like, oh my God, I need to escape to my hotel room and just fall asleep. Just too much. It became too much for me.
I mean, I'm the same way with, like, you know, there was an invite to do the Golden Girls cruise, like the cruise themed thing that happened recently. And it's just I don't think I have social anxiety. I don't. But I also am one of those people that, like, if I don't have a purpose, I don't like being trapped. You know what I mean? I don't like feeling trapped in a situation that I can't get out of without a purpose. Mm. And, you know, sure, on a Golden Girls thing, I'd perform and I'd host things and I would do things. But then when I'm not doing those things, I am quite literally trapped on a boat with a bunch of people that I don't know who like one thing and only know me because of one thing. And it becomes uncomfortable in that situation. So I can relate to that in a way. It's just...
It was a lot. I needed to unwind for like a week. And then the first time I got COVID, so I was like, this is very fitting that I will die because I got COVID at a Golden Girls convention.
Yeah.
I was ready. But it takes a lot out of you.
I got super sick at the last one. On the last day, I got super sick. And it was, you know, the reality.
You did drag again in 23?
Yeah. Most of the weekend, I did a Fernando look from the episode with Jenny Lewis, where Carrie and I. This is for anyone who knows the Golden Girls. Hopefully, you know this episode. There's a famous episode where Jenny Lewis, now she's a very famous rock star, music artist. Rilo Kiley, she does a bunch of other things too, but she was a child actress, and she was on an episode of the Golden Girls where she basically gets Rose's bear, her lifelong bear, and she holds it hostage, and she even cuts off its ear and sends it to Blanche and Dorothy for ransom, basically saying, like, I'm not giving this back until you pay me, basically. And Carrie dressed up as the little Jenny Lewis, and I was dressed up in a drag version of Fernando. We'll post that on this week's
very iconic
Instagram. Can I also throw this out real quick? In doing my prep for this episode, I was just kind of scrolling through the Google document that we have, and Alan kept shortening Golden Girls with GG. And I'm not kidding. I thought that Barrett might have a connection with Gigi Allen.
Wait,
who is the famous misanthrope?
I'm just going to say, for editorially, the first mention of Golden Girls was spelled out, and then everything following said GG. Yeah, so New York Times editorial style, thank you. For the record.
You don't always catch it when you're skimming. Anyway, go ahead, guys.
Well, no, there is something, Barrett, I do want to talk to you about. We've talked about it on your podcast before, the first time I think I did your podcast, where one of the things that I was surprised to learn when I was doing some things with, like, TV Land and other places is the incredibly huge black audience that Golden Girls has. I mean, it is like their numbers are insane on a lot of these networks. And it,
including,
I mean,
your
I never
podcast,
including your podcast too. I mean, it didn't surprise me necessarily, but it also was like, oh, that's interesting that, like, that's a component that I don't think people talk about all that much, that there's, you know, there's this crossover audience for, and it, I mean, it speaks to gay people in a way too, and we have nothing to relate to these women at all. So I wanted to know if you had any thoughts on, like, why it's so popular.
Well, in regards to why people don't talk about it, it's because we don't know. I'm always shocked to find, well, now, not now, but previously, I didn't know any black people that liked it. I didn't know anybody that liked it at all, actually. So it's very surprising now that I'm in the Golden Girls universe to see it. And I still get surprised. But I think it's just because it's just funny. Like, I don't think there's anything about it specifically that I could say I connect with, since there's hardly ever any black people on the show.
Right, I was going to say that. Yeah.
I think it's maybe my generation or our generation, just in general with the Lifetime television for women. And it came on six times a day. So I think that's more so what it is, because I didn't, you know, watch it with my grandmother or whatever, like everybody else said they did. So I think it's just crossover appeal and everyone loves it. And I think more people, including myself, thought it was mostly just, you know, a white audience, when it's like everyone loves the Golden.
It is. I mean, it is honestly, like, remarkable to stop and think about, when you think about, like, TV or just, like, you know, culture in general, pop culture in general, to stop and think about something like the Golden Girls that is about four older women a multi-camera sitcom about four older women that has persisted and has truly crossed generation after generation and just had such broad appeal. It's like, that's not a coincidence. And it really is an astounding thing to look at, you know, especially in a world where people are like, old people are, born. I mean, I guess
TV execs have that dialogue running in their head at all times. Yeah.
Right. It's just chasing youth. And at this point, and yet here we are decades after the Golden Girls, and it's obviously through Barrett. You can find that all these, it really just crosses age, color, generation, background. Like, it's just good. It's just a fun,
thing to watch. It's also a statement of, like, you know, good writing. AI could not write the Golden Girls. Like, it just could not. You know what I mean? And so really good writers in a room working on a funny, funny script. And that's one of the things I love about the four actresses. Whenever they would do press for the show or would be on late night or whatever it was, they would always talk about the writers. They would always say, all of this is because of the writers of this show. This is why it works. It's not us. It's the writers. And that is such a huge testament, I think, to, like, writing, but also to those actresses as well, you know?
Exactly. And since I have your audience, the scene about the Herring War, that was not something Betty White made up off the fly and everybody just started laughing. It was scripted. The entire thing was scripted. The person who wrote it posted the script and posted the notes. So no, they didn't make it up. It's the writers.
Just to give a backup, because this is, I will say, not the audience that will understand that reference, Barrett. This audience will. It was a speech in which, on an episode of that Rose basically had a ridiculous story that it just kept going and going, and everyone stopped for laughter. And it seems like she's improvising it. That's how good the writing and the acting is. It seems like she's improvising it because there's so much laughter coming from the audience that she can barely get her lines out. And then when it ends, it ends on an iconic line. It gets a huge laugh, but everyone thinks that Betty White improvised it because it.
Every time I see someone tweet that, I die a little bit inside.
Yeah, as I've said for years, as the show went on with time, the actresses got more loose. There was a looseness, a playfulness, and by the last couple of seasons, they weren't necessarily improvising, but there was a playfulness to which it could seem like improv, specifically when
it became campier
and when Betty would set up B for those lines where she would hit her over the head with a newspaper. You could see them really loosen it, like play with the timing. It's so good.
On a recent episode of Out on the Lanai, we watched the only B. Arthur sitcom that happened between Maud and the Golden Girls. It was called Amanda by the Sea. It had two names. They potentially
I've
were going
never
to
heard
directions,
of this.
But it was an American version of the British show Fawlty Towers, where B. Arthur plays a hotel owner, and it tried very hard, but didn't work. But there, in that moment, the hitting of the head on the newspaper thing, there's a moment in that pilot episode where she does exactly that, and it's such a B. Arthur Dorothy moment that, like.
Let me ask you this, Barrett. You did review the Golden Palace, which was the less successful spin-off of the Golden Girls. Let me just ask you if you were a fan of that in general.
I love the Golden Palace. I will die on that hill proudly.
Well,
so will I. I think it was so, it got such a bad rap. And then I watched it before Golden Con. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's a fun show. I mean, it's not as good as the Golden Girls. Sure. Nothing ever will be, but it is a fun watch. Like, it's great. It's not
Rue
like
McClanahan and Don Cheadle, and he looks he's in like his prime. I mean, I will say, he's in his prime.
Oh my god,
yeah, he's a good looking guy.
There is this one episode where Don Cheadle's Cheadle makes an appearance in a pair of silky boxer shorts, and the whole time everyone had been tweeting me being like, H. Allen, you need to watch out for this moment because they know me and they know I like penis, and so. then it came towards the end of the run, and it was worth the wait.
I have to ask you. Let me ask you guys both, because you both saw the Amanda's by the Sea. This is gonna be a little bit of a hot button question, but was this pre or post facelift?
Oh, pre.
Pre.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would probably say she She looks different. She looks different than she did in Maude, but also different than she looked in Golden Girls. It was like a mashup.
Yeah. You know, you could tell she had lost weight since Maude, but it hadn't quite reached the facelift level. But she, I think, was open about her facelift, even.
Yes, and as she was in character as Dorothy.
And it, and it was one of the best facelifts, I think, in the history of Hollywood. It is
absolutely perfect.
Perfect facelift. So good.
Is her doctor still working? Because, you know.
Probably not. Probably not, Barrett.
Live.
Well, Barrett, this was so much fun chatting with you. Where can people follow you on the internet?
Well, at So Good... Let me get my microphone here. At So Good We Named It, on all social media, you can follow the So Good We Named It Golden Girls podcast and Golden Palace, and So Good We Named It and More, where we do so much. I'm trying to find this woman that went missing 50 years ago to reunite her with her mother. There's a lot going on over there, okay? A lot. And then at So Good We Named It everywhere, literally everywhere.
And by the way, the So Good We Named It account makes such excellent Golden Girls memes, like Chef's Kiss. Hats off to you. Hats off. It's really well done.
I got to put my AI apps to very good use. I know everyone is a fan, but I'm obsessed. So, hey, we're here now. So this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you so
Thanks
much
for
Barrett.
Being here.
Thank you for having me. And before I go, Elliot, you know somebody I know.
Francesca, who's that?
Are you in her birthday picture?
I love Francesca.
Glazer.
I love Francesca. We've been longtime friends. And yeah, I love her. I love her. She's the best. And her birthday was exquisite, probably the fanciest thing, or like the most like. Well, she's like a good not just a networker. She's good at like being a person. She's like really good at that, at like life, I guess, in general.
And Elliot, quit bragging that you have friends. Come on,
yeah,
come on.
You don't have anyone outside this podcast. Let's be real.
Right,
true. That's.
And another thing. So. Summer Tao, the author of an editorial in Elliot's favorite blog, Auto Straddle.
Brent, it's not. Auto Straddle is a legit website. Also, it's not even a blog.
Every time I think of Auto Straddle, I think of AutoZone. I'm just like, what is happening on this
AutoZone.
Site? AutoZone. I literally picture like a blog where you can like buy a muffler. AutoStraddle.
I have never had more stress than when I walk into an AutoZone. It is not the store for me.
They're not fun stores. Radio Shack and you think because they're like related to electronics or cars, it'll be kind of fun, but they fucking suck.
They're not. Very intimidating.
Anyway, Summer Tao wrote an editorial recently that posed the question, should we be establishing nude pic protocols when swapping nudes with significant others?
Interesting.
Summer outlines these questions to a handful of questions to ask your sleazy partner to get the ball rolling before sending booty hole pics. These questions are as follows.
I hope they use that in the article, did booty hole pics.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you say sleazy or that's...
I added sleazy.
Yeah.
So the questions are, how do I feel about these messages being shared, whether shown to others or forwarded? These are questions that you're posing with your partner. You're asking your partner, how do I feel about media, pics, videos being stored, and should they be stored in a specific way? What should happen to my media if this relationship ends? How should I convey these rules to my partners, and what does it say about them if they disagree?
This is when you know that this site is primarily read and written by queer women, because
yes.
It's very considerate, it's very thought out, it's very emotionally cognizant, and gay guys are like farting out pics just left and right. Just
right.
It is an interesting question, though.
Very interesting.
Really, even just outside of the intimate partners, it's like, I think men probably casually share pics more than women, but in terms of just like, you know, what is the sort of like transactional agreement that you have when you send a pic with somebody, be it a significant other, but also be it just sort of someone casual too? Like, what are the rules? You know, are there unwritten rules to how that pic can be used and viewed, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think it's an interesting conversation. I will say, I think the cynical part of me would probably argue it skews a bit naive, only because, like, these are reasonable questions to ask and to have this conversation with your partner.
You're saying
or your
the questions
other.
Skew naive?
I think the question, the assumption that, you know, after a relationship ends, someone will be beholden to what they agreed upon, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months prior. Now, sure, you know, moral people who, you know, live true to their word, yes, they will delete these pictures if that's what was agreed upon. But I think, you know, I just think it's a lot to assume that because you had a conversation at one point in the first 2 weeks of a fleeting.
Yeah,
you know,
I think at least for me, at least the general rule has always been sort of like, there is this sort of unwritten agreement that like, this is for you. This is not for to be shared with anybody else. This is just for you. Now, I assume you're not going to be posting that anywhere or doing anything with it or anything, but I can't stop you from saving it to your camera roll. I can't stop you from saving it to whatever Dropbox or whatever you do. I can't stop you from doing that. And I have to be okay with that in my head, knowing that like, okay, well, I'm trusting you that you're not going to get this out or whatever. But I also know things get hacked, things get out, things happen. And it's like, that is the world we live in. So if I am sending this to you and I want to send this to you, that's the risk that I, as the person who send it, is taking. Now, if that person does something malicious and it gets out, so like they share it with somebody else or they intentionally do something wrong, well, then that is actually grounds for, I think, a lawsuit in many states because it's
revenge porn.
Yeah, but if it's just sort of like for your personal use, and yes, if the relationship is over, that's also a part of the transactional thing that happened within that relationship for me. You know, that's sort of like the, well, I know that I sent that to that person and I'm no longer in that relationship with that person. And sure, that person might use it to jerk off or do whatever they do with it in the future. I don't know what they're going to do with it, but I can't stop them from doing that. And I'm not going to go back and be like, I want to see you delete that picture because right. that's too much for me.
Also, how do you know, like, I mean, I always just think of what Brent says, which is like, eventually we're going to have a president who's, what do you say that we'll have a president whose dick pic everyone has seen?
Yeah.
We almost saw the video of hookers peeing on Trump apparently, because that video apparently kind of maybe exists somewhere. So we might already have had a president like that.
Yeah.
But your point is that it's so commonplace that at a certain point, it's not going to be taboo anymore is what you're saying, right?
Well, I think so. First of all, I agree with Alan 100% that to me, the boundary is you should not be sharing nude pictures. Not that I would know, I've never sent one, but you should not be sharing nude pictures that you received. No, once I sent one once and I didn't get very positive feedback, so I stopped after that. But you should not be sharing nude pictures with other people or online, full stop. I will say, though, I do think, especially for younger folks, I do think we should shift how we talk about these leaks and focus on the fact that if your nude pics are leaked, we will deal with who did that later. That is revenge porn. That is wrong. But if that happens, it's not an awful thing and you're not a bad person.
I just had a friend go through this. I just had a friend go through this and it was actually very traumatic for me as the person who was sort of being the first line of response for this friend, because someone, they had done something and whatever the situation is, and this person was then using a video that they had sent in a safe way, you know, via like a video that gets deleted or whatever, you know, Snapchat or Instagram or whatever.
Right, right.
And of course the person recorded it and then used it against them. And it is that kind of conversation of like, okay, well, yes, you made a decision to send this, but you need to know that this isn't the end of the world. That this isn't, you know, if this gets out there, it's not the end of the world. And that is kind of the conversation in that, like, you know, yeah, you regret it, but at the same time, like, it's not a judgment on who you are or anything like that. And it is, but it is, there are a lot of really shitty people out there. And this kind of gets away from the actual conversation because... But then again, there are lots of really shitty ex-boyfriends, too, who want to do things to get back at exes.
I really can't imagine a scenario in which I would use somebody's most vulnerable images.
Yeah, I can't either.
Against them. Like, I truly can't imagine a reason why that would come up, and B, actually having the gall to do it. And I still think one of the darkest things I've ever seen is Brent enlightening me to LPSG.
Yeah,
this, sure. The site where people, I mean, it really just seems like a place where gay guys solicit dick pics and really compromising pictures, and then post them in public formats to mm-hmm. not, it's not to avenge anybody. It's just like gossip, but it's so.
Well, yeah. Just to clarify, I have never posted photos on LPSG.
No.
At this point, it's mostly like a great way to check whether someone's OnlyFans is actually any good or not. You can just Google their handle in LPSG, and you'll literally find reviews. That's how I use it. But yeah, we talked about Male General before, which is a lot sleazier. It's like basically the same thing Elliot just said, but you know, pretty pointed, like. You know, Grindr nude pictures being leaked anonymously online in the thousands a day.
And disgusting.
And it's pretty wild.
Racist, anti-Semitic. Like, it's a horrible place that makes me feel very bad about gay men.
Yeah. But but it is also kind of like, you know, it's to me, I look at sites like that and I'm like, oh, well, this is just a graphic Reddit in a way. This
is
a gay graphic Reddit. And it's just people's opinions and sharing them. Again, behind fake identities it's a thorny topic with the internet, because there is a thing going through Congress, I think, right now about identification and having to have some form of identification to have social media handles and everything, which I think is actually potentially very dangerous for certain communities. I'm thinking trans people. I'm thinking a lot of different people who, for whatever reasons, they can't be on platforms for the reasons that, you know, exist in their lives. And so there needs to be another way of verification, but there is also a danger for people to then just blindly have this anonymity online and say and do the most horrible things. And that's the problem with revenge porn in a lot of times, where people will post things and they'll be hidden behind these anonymities, these profiles that have no access to figuring out who this person is. So that way, when it comes to trying to take any legal action, there is no legal action. There's nothing you can do because you can't discover who the fucking person is. And the social media website is not going to be able to give the user information out to the person who's trying to sue them. So it's like, it's this really shitty circle of, you just have to be okay with this person being this asshole, putting this information out there. Yeah. And that sucks. that sucks a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we were touching upon this earlier in our chat, in our Oh You Son of a Bitch chat. But
subscribe to Patreon. You can hear the full thing, everyone.
Subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/you're making it worse. Do you guys send out nudes? Obviously, yes. Alan, you're in a loving, committed relationship.
But yes, I have. I mean, yes, you've sent out a lot of those out there. Yeah.
What about you, Elliot?
I wouldn't say a lot. Let's be real.
I have, but understanding that, like, once you send something like that, and I get it, like, the world is changing. It's so universal, especially among, like, gay guys, but, or you know, whomever. It's not just gay guys, but in general, it's still haunts me in the back of my head that, like, this is forever. This can last forever. But I would never do it with anything with, like, my head or face in it. I'm also so weird. I don't know. I find it so unappealing. Like, it's like, there's nothing anti-sexual about it to me.
There's nothing better than someone just sending you a nice little D. You know, just being like, I'm thinking of you. Here's a little D.
No, I mean, I've had that consent. I've had that with exes, and I just I'm not mad at it, of course, but it doesn't do anything for me.
Do you just respond with a heart on the picture? Is that all you do?
Thumbs up. Nice.
Nice little thumbs up.
I like a hang loose emoji. Nice.
Oh my God. Don't ever send that to me. Ever.
N-O-I-C-E. Nice.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
I get revenge porn. Every time I get mad at your Uncle Hamilton, I take a Polaroid of his butt and I post it in a truck stop. I don't know.
a truck stop, a Polaroid in a truck stop.
It's an old school. Wow. It's an old school revenge porn.
Wow.
My Aunt Joanne would say, you know, Bea Arthur's real name is Beatrice Frankel. You know what that means?
Jewish?
Jewish. How about Aunt Anne?
Aunt Anne
would say, I would never, never send your Uncle Ray a nude, but I would send him a recipe for snickerdoodles, which coincidentally is what I call my nudes.
Yeah, that's cute. I love that.
You want to see my snickerdoodles?
By the way, I don't like snickerdoodles. Can I just tell you?
No. How do you not like snickerdoodles?
It's like dusty and like it's just like one of the least redeeming cookies to me.
Oh, no, they're so good, man.
When I was a kid, the snickerdoodles were not called snickerdoodles. They were named after me for scooter doodles.
Love them.
I love scooter doodles so much.
Was that your name when you were a kid? Scooter.
Scooter. Yeah, I would get Scooter a lot.
I am calling you that from now on.